88.9 FM reminds you that the views expressed on WEAA programs are those of participants and not necessarily those of Morgan State University, the staff, management, or underwriters of Baltimore's home for cool jazz. WEAA 88.9 FM.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. In our continuing look at how we develop our communities and cities, how we develop this city in particular, and what happens with the future of Port Covington, we're having numerous conversations. When we talked to Barbara Samuels the other week, the head of housing for the ACLU here in Maryland, she talked about Oak Park in Illinois and suggested we call Rob Rehmeyer, who is executive director of the Oak Park Regional Housing Center, talk about what they did there, and we have him on the phone with us now. And Rob, welcome. Good to have you with us on the program.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So let's take us back. So what is Oak Park?
So Oak Park is a suburb. It's the first suburb directly west of the city of Chicago. If you were on either our two of our L lines, the Green Line and the Blue Line, we would be the first suburb and the only suburb that you would get to on those lines. And we are, there's 52,000 people. It's a moderately to becoming more dense community. It's pretty solidly middle class at this point, but it's also very racially diverse and integrated.
So now what, take it back to the beginning of this history. I mean, from what I've been reading, there was always a history in Oak Park from the very beginning of actually a Maryland, a Baltimore family that, originally a Baltimore family, Percy Julian, one of the great chemists, who moving into Oak Park, and there's always been these battles over integration, but that was a while back, right?
Well, that was in the early 1950s,
right.
And I often talk about that as the spark that got us on the path to where we are. When he moved to town, someone tried to firebomb his home, and they were luckily unsuccessful at being able to try to do that, but the more important part is that 300 Oak Parkers, and at that time, Percy Julian was the first black homeowner in Oak Park, so these were all white people who came to his defense and rallied on his front lawn to say, this man deserves to live here. We're an open and inclusive community. And that was the beginning, really, of the Oak Park strategy. That was where folks started to change their mindsets about what it meant to be a successful community.
And that, I mean, and of course, he's one of our, he was a brilliant biochemist. But then, so talk a bit about what happened then in the 60s and 70s, where this shift really began. Because that was the point in many cities where black folks moving into neighborhoods that are traditionally white, Jewish, Irish neighborhoods, wherever they happen to be, and then white folks fleeing. So what was the story in Oak Park then?
Right. So in the late 60s and early 70s, Oak Parkers did a lot of things to promote a more inclusive community. We passed a fair housing ordinance at almost the same time as the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968. We had efforts in town to help people move into the community, while at the same time the communities that were surrounding us, the other suburbs surrounding us, were actually acting very hostily towards people of color, which was at that time mostly African Americans, trying to move into their towns. And then at the same time, the neighborhood in Chicago that is directly east of us was changing through blockbusting and steering and panic peddling from a predominantly white neighborhood to a predominantly black neighborhood.
And that was
happened
Austin.
In a very
that was Austin,
short period
right?
of time. That was the Austin neighborhood in
right.
Chicago, yes. And it happened very, very quickly, and Oak Parkers saw that happening, and they saw how it was not only something that they wanted to avoid socially, they could see that what was happening in that process was it was a way that the real estate industry was making money on both ends of the deal and really stripping wealth away from both the African-American families moving in and the white families moving out. And they really were adamant that that wasn't going to be able to happen in their community.
So, talk about what happened. I mean, how did the community organize itself and change and grow into an interracial neighborhood?
Well, I think the brilliance of it is the community recognized that if they were going to build an inclusive and integrated community, they were going to have to get involved in the process of people searching for a home. And so they created an entity, which I run today, the Oak Park Regional Housing Center, which did just that. the folks in the community opened up the housing center in 1972, and the housing center was here to help anyone who was looking to move into Oak Park find a place to live. And it's since morphed into really focusing only on the rental market, and we sort of leverage the real estate community to take care of the homeownership market for us through cooperation and training. And then, but we still, to this day, if someone wants to find an apartment, they can come to us. We have the listings of almost every apartment in Oak Park, and we can help them move. And in that process, what we're doing is really two important things. One, we're marketing the community as an excellent place to live that is open to everyone, so that we get a demand that reflects the diversity of our region. And then when folks come to look for a place to live, we are helping them expand their minds to think about neighborhoods that they otherwise would have avoided, so that we can help promote integration in the community. So we want to be both a diverse community, but we don't want to be segregated within our community. So we're helping people think about ways where they can move so that each neighborhood, each block, even each building is as integrated as possible.
So now, I'm curious, when you say that, the first thing that comes to mind, I mean, Oak Park is, how big is Oak Park first? Let's start
Oak Park is really only 4.5 square miles. It's 3 miles north to south and 1.5 miles east toward west.
So, I mean, I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, but do you steer people to certain neighborhoods? And some steering has horrible connotations, you know, in the world of housing. Are there quotas? I mean, how do you work that?
Well, there are not quotas. We can't have quotas.
Right, right.
But what we do look at is we do a couple things. One, we think about what does our region look like? So if our region, in the Chicago region, is about 60-something percent white, 20-something percent African-American, 20-something percent Latino, about 5% Asian. And so we think Oak Park should at least try to approach some parity with what that looks like in the region. And the reason that we think that is that if it does, then that means that people of all of those major racial groups are looking for housing and able to find housing in equal proportion to what they make up as the population. So that's an indication that there aren't a lot of barriers there for folks. We're doing pretty well on that front. We're actually underrepresented for Latinos in a fairly significant amount, but that is mostly due to an overrepresentation in African Americans and whites. And so then the Asian number is like almost exactly the same. Now, that doesn't mean that if it's 22% in the region, that we'd look to try to get to exactly 22% for somebody in our community. But it does mean that we look at that as a benchmark, and if we were changing from 22 to 10 or changing from 22 to 50, we would wonder why is that occurring, and is there something we need to do to make sure that everyone feels welcome in the community? So that's an important part of what we're doing. As far as how we're getting them to integrate, it's not really a steering issue so much, or like some people will call it reverse steering.
Right.
But I think it would be more properly termed anti-steering. We're taking people away from the mindset that they're often in because of steering. So if they were to meet with typical real estate agents, not necessarily the agents in Oak Park because we've worked so hard with them, but in almost any other neighborhood or community in Chicago, they would be meeting with a real estate agent, and the real estate agent would follow the home seeker's lead, and that person is going to give them an idea of the communities they want to live in. Well, we know, based on the research that's out there, and also based on the evidence of the data from the clients that have used our center over the years, that people have preconceived notions about where they should and should not live, or where they will and won't consider, and it's really very closely correlated with race. You can't. I haven't ever done a regression analysis to find out if it's cause and effect, but it's definitely like if you do a plot to look at the correlation, it's very, very close. And so, we also know from the interaction of the folks we talk to that they use language that is basically sometimes explicit, but many times coded language to talk about how they're trying to avoid certain neighborhoods in the community. And they will use sort of references that connect to issues of race.
So is the community of Oak Park racially integrated and economically integrated, or mostly racially integrated?
The racial integration is our most important concern, and it is certainly racially integrated. It is economically integrated as well, but that has to do with additional policy that's been added on to our racial integration strategy. So we have our own housing authority in the town. There are 550 voucher holders that housing authority works with. So that's about 3% of our households in the community, which is a percentage point higher than it is nationally or in the Chicago region. Across the country, only 2% of households are voucher holders. Well, we've done a little bit better than that in our community, and we work with our housing authority to help make sure that the voucher holders are dispersed throughout the community. It doesn't feel like one part of the community is where all the Section 8 buildings are or something like that. You can't even do that in Oak Park. There's no way to point to a building and say that's where all the voucher holders live. Because of our integration strategy there, we also we've had one low-income housing tax credit property built in the community, and that's happened more recently as the community has gotten more expensive. So it used to be that our rental market was a pretty, it was never the least expensive, but it was a rental market that working-class people could move into, and it's getting a little tougher recently, and so we're trying to come up with ways to deal with that issue as well. The tax credit properties are one. We use some of our CDBG dollars to help with rehab of units that then have to have criteria to help low and moderate income folks move into those units.
And those units have people of all incomes in them?
Well, the low-income housing tax credit property is a 51-unit building that you have to be low-income for. The other program is a program where you might have a building with 6 units and you would help rehab 2 of them, and those 2 would have low-income folks, but the other 4 would be market-rate renters. So that ideal is what we're searching for, but even in that building that has the 51 folks all together, that building is located in a neighborhood that has a lot of amenities, a lot of opportunity, some expensive homes around it. And, you know, while ideally at every scale we would have full integration, in this situation what we've done is met a serious community need and then located that building in a way so at least the neighborhood will be racially and economically integrated.
So how does that function on a couple levels here? How does that function in terms of interaction between people who live in Oak Park?
Right. Yeah, that's an important factor because one thing that I always like to talk to people about is that it's not as if we figured out every problem ever in Oak Park. It's not a utopia.
Right.
But we do have, and it's not as if there's always constant and, you know, perfectly harmonious communication among people of different racial and economic backgrounds. But we do have efforts in place to consistently improve on that. So whether it's efforts that happen with the Housing Center putting on community forums, whether there's also efforts that are, we have a community foundation in the community that will promote racial dialogue. We have a number of nonprofits that serve as a very strong and very proactive and sort of cutting edge safety net. We're often our organizations are often awarded for their innovative policies and those sorts of things. And then even our library system and our park district work to make sure that we're connecting people in different ways. And then finally, you know, our municipal government, which we call a village. The village government, including in the police department, does a lot to work on making sure that there's greater dialogue across the community and that the police and the community are seeing each other as as on the same side and working together. I think, all the things that have happened, certainly some of those have happened in Baltimore recently, and we have Chicago right next to us, between police and residents, those are things that we're actively trying to ensure would never happen here. So, and that is, all of that goes back to this commitment that the community has to diversity and integration and promoting a more inclusive community that hopefully in the end, in the long run, will provide for equitable outcomes as well. I mean, that's our reason for doing this. We want to make sure the community remains prosperous and vibrant, and we want to make sure that everybody shares in the equity and opportunity.
So how integrated is the leadership of the government, of the police, of the people who call the shots?
Yeah, it's pretty integrated. I mean, we have diverse boards at every level. So both, we believe it or not, we have two school districts, one elementary, one high school.
Mm-hmm.
Those are integrated, our park district, our village government, our township government, all have diverse members on them. And actually, like, the one that's, the most visible is our municipal government, our village government. And we don't run with regular political parties in Oak Park. There aren't Democrats and Republicans in Oak Park. We have local parties.
What does that mean, local parties?
It's a very funny thing. We have something in Oak Park called the Village Managers Alliance. It's the group of folks who actually were very involved in the initial stages of the Oak Park strategy and also an anti-corruption strategy in the community back in the 60s and 50s. And they won't actually have a party candidate, but they will have a slate of candidates that they will endorse. So people run independently, but they will be endorsed on a slate from one of these local parties. And so the VMA is the one that's been most consistent. There's others that have come up and popped up and disappeared over the years. But any one of those groups would never even consider promoting a slate that didn't have a diverse set of folks. So it's either three or four people every time that we do the election. And it would be an absurdity in Oak Park for there to be three white people or four white people on your slate. That just, it's like, it would be a bad political move for the group, and it just would be something that we would all, you know, citizens would sort of be upset about, that it wasn't in the spirit of the community.
And you said the schools are also both racially and economically integrated. People
are not running
off with their kids in private schools.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a huge problem with kids going to private schools. Our schools perform quite well, so that's. It's definitely a little less white than it is for the community as a whole. Part of that has to do with a little bit with private school, and a little part of that has to do with two other phenomena. One, I think there might be greater diversity as ages get lower in Oak Park, just like in the rest of the country. And there is a phenomena of folks moving to Oak Park during the period in which their kids are school-aged and then leaving afterwards. So that sometimes occurs in the rental market in particular. Because people are trying to escape other really poorer school districts, and so that's something I think the community actually can take as a sense of pride, that we're able to, be a place that those students can come to and feel like they're getting they and their parents feel like they're getting a safer and better environment for their children.
Aside from one of the things I read, somebody referred to as a columnist in the Chicago Tribune, of the People's Republic of Oak Park.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something that we kind of got pushed on when in the 80s, I think, when some of these efforts they were a lot more front and center. And, the folks who are more libertarian or the folks who are a little bit more conservative bristle at the idea that we want to be intentional about providing opportunity in our community rather than just sit back and let the market do whatever it would do. We're not like doing some kind of crazy socialist experiment here. We're really working within individual choices and helping leverage those individual choices to create structural change. So one of the most important things I like to talk about when we talk about this model is that it doesn't require a bunch of new infrastructure. It doesn't require a bunch of, sort of draconian plans and rules. It really is about just putting a structure in place to give people an opportunity to make a more informed choice about where they're going to live. And once they meet with us, which is really what that mechanism is, coming to the housing center and sitting down with an advisor and getting some listings, but also talking through what the amenities are in for those listings and what the amenities are in the neighborhoods where they're at, and talking through people's fears and misconceptions, and then changing their mindset about where they might want to live. And that really is not, you know, anything radical. It's really just a conversation. And once people know the real information, they get or they get better information, they are able to make the best choice for themselves. So many times in the housing market, we make decisions based on incomplete information and false assumptions. And one of the things that makes our program so brilliant is that we're removing those false assumptions and adding to that incomplete information so that people understand their true choices.
Yeah, I read also that in the report I alluded to earlier from Temple University about Oak Park, that was this long report, that speaking of economic integration, other parts, that Oak Park created what they're calling a successful, innovative gang intervention program. Now, well, tell me a bit about that.
You know, that's something that must not really be as prevalent today, because I really don't know much about that. And when that paper was written, it was before I was the executive director.
It was the 1990s, but yeah, right.
Yeah, and you know, that's not really an issue that we deal with. Now, I will say that, you know, we do have a fairly high police per capita ratio here. But again, what's been great, and we just had our police chief retire after being here for 30 years, but what he was so wonderful about, and what the police department I think has institutionalized that's so wonderful, is our police officers and our police department approach their job as if they're social workers, not as if they're, you know, military officers. They are in the community to be helpful and to serve the community. And certainly there are times in which they have to, deal with, arresting someone or things like that. But a big part of what their job is in the community and the way that it's understood in the community is that the police are providing a connection to the village government. And they are providing a sense of, understanding that we have a broad community that's working together. So it's a different mindset, I think, than a lot of other communities about what the police are here to do. It's a little bit more, this is an interesting point because I often say this, that Oak Park has always got this very interesting combination of being a very sort of old-fashioned traditional community, like you might see, almost like Mayberry, and being this extremely progressive community in which we're trying to make sure that we're racially inclusive and economically inclusive and that we're environmentally sustainable and that we're doing everything we can to be open for, LGBTQ community and many, many other things. But at the same time, when you come to Oak Park, I don't think you get a sense of, like, it's overly earnest. You really get a sense that the community is just a really nice place to live. And part of that reason is when you come here, no matter who you are, you feel welcome.
So I'm curious how you think this model of yours in Oak Park extrapolates out to the larger world. The reality is that often integrated communities work when white people think they're in the majority, and they like that.
Right.
I don't mean to sound so pejorative about it, but I mean, in communities like ours here in Baltimore, 63% of Baltimore is African American, those balances make some people panic. How do you think that your model can be applied to any other place in the country?
So I think our model works really well, and it can be replicated in other places because what it's doing is, I will say that I think our model is best served to be replicated in, if you're going to do it in a city, sort of at maybe a neighborhood by neighborhood level. I'm sure we could do it, but it would be more difficult to do it at a citywide level in a place like Baltimore or Detroit or even Chicago. The it would make more sense as a neighborhood place-by-place model. It also would be very, very helpful in suburban environments where you have populations between, you know, or maybe, you know, under 100,000, and there are rental populations in those, rent, you know. So Oak Park, even though we're a solidly middle-class community, our rental market is about 39% of our market. So it's, you know, there's a lot of rental options, and we can use the rental market as our basis to sort of set the integration in all of our neighborhoods. In fact, really, rental is an important part of how we're able to sustain our integration. And a lot of times, mayors or community residents will think of rental as a more unstable thing, but actually, it's a really important tool for promoting integration. And to sustain the integration, because people make one-year decisions or maybe three-year decisions when they're renting versus making 10 to 30-year decisions when they're buying a home. So there's a little bit more malleability to work with anything that happens when there's differences coming, you know, because of market reasons or because of, you know, whether the market gets hot or the market gets cold. You can deal with those a little bit better. The, you know, as far as the racial mix goes, there's a way to talk about that without making it feel like one group, you know, you have to worry about which group's in the majority, right, and which group's in the minority. What it's really about is, are we able to find a way to bring people together to understand that it's the diversity that makes the community stronger? So is the, you know, what does that mean? Well, that diversity isn't going to be strong if it's segregated, because then you've got a community where people are pit against each other, and they start to think about, well, why does that part of the community get more than this part of the community? Or, you know, those sorts of kinds of questions that, you know, ruin the harmony of community, create greater tension, and start to breed mistrust. But if you have any sort of, you know, level of diversity, and, you know, that's at least modestly, you know, including everyone, and you figure out a way to bring integration into that equation, now people are living next to one another. Hopefully they're talking more to one another. They're learning and building greater empathy with one another. And you can't point to a certain geographic part of the community and say, well, that part's getting something more because of the people who live there. If everybody lives everywhere, then you don't get that kind of, you don't get that kind of tension and that kind of distrust that comes in other communities. And we can see this in when you compare sort of how the more integrated a community gets when they have a certain level of diversity or higher, the better the community ends up doing both socially and economically.
This has been a really fascinating conversation. I'd like to do more of this and learn a great deal more. There's a lot here for us to wrestle with in our community from learning from what you did at Oak Park. Rob Braemeyer is Executive Director of the Oak Park Regional Housing Center. Fascinating, Rob. I deeply appreciate you taking the time with us today.
I appreciate it. Anytime.